It's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Wednesday, middle of the week edition of It's Your Turn. Another rainy and dreary day. This is three in a row. The good news is the weather folks think it's going to be the last day for the rain for a while. Probably going to take us most of tomorrow to clear out the clouds. But the long-range forecast for Friday, Saturday, Sunday is lots of sunshine, so hang on for one more day. I know it's pretty miserable, especially when you get 3 days in a row like this. So we'll make our own sunshine here on the program today. We'll do it indoors. A little bit later on the program today, we're going to be talking about trying to make sure that you're dealing well with weight problems. If you're carrying a few too many pounds, we'll be talking with J.J. Smith. She'll have some ideas for us on that. And we have some other guests coming up later on the program as well. But first of all, we say hello once again to Matt McCune. He's the vice president of the Butler Downtown Organization, and he's here in the studio with us. Matt, good to see you again.
You too, Dave. Thanks for having me again.
We meet periodically with representatives of Butler Downtown to keep up to date on what's happening in the business district of the county seat of Butler. And Butler Downtown is a very active organization. Matt, did I say he's currently the vice president, right?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. We're coming off the end of the summer. We've had quite a bit of activity downtown. I think it went pretty well. We had the concert series during the summertime in the parking lot across from the Burger Hut there on North Main Street. I see the stage has been torn down, so that's obviously done for the season.
That's right, yep.
Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of other special events in the downtown, not necessarily coordinated by Butler Downtown, but anything that happens downtown, you folks are happy, right? Brings people downtown.
Absolutely. That's fulfilling our mission. We don't want to be involved in everything, but we certainly want to know about it so we can help promote it. Mm-hmm. That way we know people are coming down, they're having a good time, they're having a good opportunity, good, you know, bite to eat, something like that. Help out the business owners and help out the residents and all that. So the more that's happening, the better.
The Butler Downtown Organization has been involved with a revolving loan fund that helps to make money available for business owners who want to kind of spruce up their facade, I guess, huh? Downtown? Or even for, I don't know, work inside their building? Is it just for the facades?
No, it's for the permitted use of the funds. It's kind of a wide range. You can use it for acquiring buildings.
Oh, okay.
Or land. Costs associated with, if you need to make improvements to the actual property or building, updates, things of that nature, remodeling, mechanical issues, HVAC issues, anything like that that's going to be a common expense for, mm-hmm. if you're starting a business, trying to acquire some property, or just trying to update your business or your property. Those are the types of things that these funds are for.
I didn't realize that it was so unrestricted. That's terrific.
Sure.
Yeah. So are these funds available right now, or can you make application for them already, or what's the deal?
Yes, absolutely. We do have some funds currently available for people or businesses to apply for. So if you are a business in the city or want to start a business or want to acquire some property in the city, I would say go to our website. It's butlerdowntown.org. On the main page in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a tab for the revolving loan fund. Mm-hmm. There's a guideline PDF document that you can find all the information there. Also, some information about applying. If anybody does have any questions, you can obviously reach out to our organization or me specifically. I actually sit on the revolving loan committee as well, so I'm involved in the decision-making process as well. But any questions that anybody might have, please reach out to us. The money is there. And you know, just like the name says, this is a revolving loan fund. So,
which means that as people take out and repay their loan, then the money becomes available for somebody else.
That's exactly right. Goes back in. When it reaches a certain point, we can lend it back out.
Mm-hmm.
So theoretically, if we keep doing this over and over again for several years, I mean, the fund will grow and the money available, will multiply.
You know, is this, and I realize that officers change, so you may not have knowledge on this. Is this a fairly new program, or has it been around for a while? Do you know that?
It's been a couple of years. It did kind of go dormant for a while. The money was lent out initially. The payments were being made. The money went into a fund, but it wasn't loaned back out again.
Okay.
So within the past year, we kind of, brushed off the dust and said, hey, this is a good... This would be a good thing for people to take advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no reason for this money just to be sitting in this account. So, hey, let's get this going again. It took some work. It did take some work to get moving. But we were able to, in the last 6 weeks or so, make our first loan.
Oh, okay.
So... Mm-hmm. It was a good thing. We're glad to see that happen, but there is money available, and this is a very good loan. The interest rate is 1.5% below the prime rate, so this is cheap money.
Mm-hmm.
for somebody who has an eligible purpose. I would certainly encourage you to. Just apply. I mean, even if you don't think that you're really, I don't think that this is something that, they'd be interested in. I mean, just apply, I guess the worst case scenario, we can say no, mm-hmm. but the money is available. We don't have too many applications right now, so.
Could augment other funds that might be available, either that, businesses set aside for this or whatever other funds they might have available. This could augment that.
Yes, and there is a minimum. There's a $15,000 minimum loan amount. Which isn't an insignificant amount of money, but capital projects or renovations. And I know it's because I just moved into a new house in the past year.
Mm-hmm.
Renovation projects. They add up, so $15,000, I don't think, would, you'd be able to use that up in a renovation project, no problem.
So you cannot apply for less than that? Is that?
That's correct.
Is that the deal? Okay, so that means,
But you can't apply for more.
Mm-hmm. If you're replacing a screen door or something, obviously, that's not a significant project.
That's correct.
You'd qualify.
Unless it was a very expensive screen door.
Very expensive. And you can get more information and even apply for this online.
Yes. ButlerDowntown.org. Again, in the upper right-hand corner is a revolving loan fund tab. All the information and contact information is available
mm-hmm.
right on that website.
We had a story on the news within the past month or so, maybe the past couple of months. I know it was late this summer. About the cleanup work in the downtown, and there was a department store in the region that was possibly going to be able to team up with the city volunteers to do that. Are you familiar with that, Matt?
Yes. So there has been some talk about possibly partnering with Kohl's, who doesn't make some of their employees available for service projects, mm-hmm. Around the community. We, as an organization, and other other folks around the community, is wanted to put together some cleanup projects around Main Street a couple times a year, maybe once in the fall, once in the spring, something along those lines, or every other Saturday. I mean, there's always going to be stuff that needs to be cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be true whenever, wherever. But we were trying to facilitate this partnership. I mean, if they were willing to, provide that resource, we'd say, hey, the more the merrier. So there has been talk about getting them involved, and we certainly appreciate it. I hope we can make it work, because these cleanup projects are probably the easiest to schedule, easiest to facilitate, and obviously does an immediate good for the community because it's picking up some trash or, cleaning up the mulch or planting some flowers, which hopefully makes the main street area and the community look nicer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's in the various, I guess you'd call them planters, where the trees are along Main Street on both sides of the street. There's mulch in there that could be tended to. And there's always a little bit of litter,
Right. Yeah. Right, that's not going away.
Mm-hmm. And if you get a concerted effort, you can make a big difference, boy.
That's right.
With a cleanup project,
Exactly, and I think all we need to do is create some momentum. And I do think that there are also people who are willing to volunteer. They're just not really sure how to do it or who to ask. Mm-hmm. So, if this becomes a regular thing, everybody knows. Hey, on the third Saturday or whatever. Whatever we decide or whatever kind of materializes organically, more people can get involved.
Well, keep us posted on that because we'll be happy to announce it on the air when you've got, got a date or got something set up, and hopefully I'll get some more volunteers for you. I'm a big believer in setting an example. I've seen in many communities, big cities and small, where If you've noticed, people tend to litter in a certain spot. You'll come up to a street corner or an alley, maybe, and you look, and there's just paper and bags and paper cups everywhere. And it seems like people see that, and they say, oh, and they toss their, a hamburger wrapper or their milkshake container there. Oh, look, everybody else is throwing it here. And the dirt breeds more dirt.
Yeah.
It can work the other way around,
yes.
Too, I think,
Littering is contagious, you're absolutely right. It can work.
If people see a clean street and no litter, then hopefully they would be more inclined to, we do have trash bins all up and down Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
So use that instead of tossing.
That's right.
Yeah. So cleanup projects. The city has done this in the spring. In the past, they've had one big, super fragilistic cleanup day. I think it's been pretty successful.
Yes, I agree. Something that has happened in years.
Shade Tree Project, I think, was involved in that too. Shade Tree Commission.
Yes, and I believe Julie Dandoy was someone who did a lot of work to put that together.
Yeah, we miss her.
Yes, yeah. We absolutely do. Yeah. And this year's was put on in her memory. And I think that goes into it too. That's something that she a lot of sweat and a lot of time she put into it. So it would be a shame if it were to just go by the wayside. So that goes into it too. We'd like to continue her work, but also work to clean up the community at the same time.
Well, if that happens to work out with either the help from Kohl's department store on Newcastle Road here in Butler, or with other volunteers, and you get a date set, make sure and let us know. This would be something that you would pretty much have to do before winter sets in because, once you get snow and ice, pretty tough to do that.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, hopefully be able to get something going this fall. We're chatting with Matt McCune. If you're joining us a little bit late, Matt is the vice president of the Butler Downtown Organization, which has remained very active, even though it's been, for the past few years now, strictly a volunteer organization. Right, Matt?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. There was a time some years ago when there was some grant money available from, I think it was from the state, for Main Street projects or something like that, but that money went away several years ago. The group stayed in business, and they've done okay with volunteers, but you could always use more help, huh?
Absolutely, and I would suggest to anybody out there who feels they want to volunteer some time in the community, in the Main Street area for you know, whatever reason, visit our website again, butlerdowntown.org. Get a hold of us. Let us know that you're interested in volunteering. There's some information on there about the various committees that we do have and when they plan to meet.
Mm-hmm. We're not talking just about cleanup. This is a different thing if you would want to volunteer to be on one of the various committees of the group, right?
Sure. There's a promotions committee that puts on various events throughout the year. You know, the concert series, there's a bunny trail in around Easter time.
Mm-hmm.
The Christmas Tree Project, which I think we're going to talk about a little later, those various promotions, which need volunteers. You know, there's a lot that goes into planning them. And, you know, the more people that you have, the easier it gets. You kind of divvy, you know, the responsibilities up. There's a design committee. There's also an economic vitality committee that's rather active, and they deal with doing anything they can to help businesses flourish, whether that's getting people downtown or, you know, various issues dealing with real estate and things of that nature. So if you're someone that has some, you know, knowledge in those areas, you know, maybe that's the right fit.
Didn't that committee work, and this may have been, I'm sure it was before your time on the board, they worked in cooperation with City Council to implement a sliding scale tax abatement program for new businesses coming into Butler, whereby their taxes would be reduced by a certain amount for a few years to get them started.
Yeah. That would have been before my time. I mean, I've been involved in the organization since this will be my third year coming up.
I think it would have been right before you came on then.
Sounds right.
They talked about that. They worked with council, and they got it approved. So, and that helps, you know. Mm-hmm. It doesn't eliminate taxes. It puts them on a slightly reduced sliding scale, and over a period of whatever it is, 3 or 4 years, then they would be paying the full rate. But again, any little bit helps these days.
Sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Giving
so many communities are doing that. So many states are doing that. Mm-hmm. I was reading a story on the wire about in North Carolina, there's a group of cities, Raleigh, Durham, I forget where the University of North Carolina is located, Chapel Hill.
Yes. Yeah.
Those communities are all fairly close together, those cities. And North Carolina's been offering all kind of, you know, tax abatement, tax reduction to try to bring companies there. Yeah. And they've succeeded. I mean, you know, there's rapid growth there. But what it does is it almost makes it a necessity for other places to offer at least some sort of incentives.
Yeah. It's an attractive area for a lot of different ways,
mm-hmm.
For individuals, families, businesses, students.
Well, it works. I mean, in Butler County, not in the downtown area. I don't have any updated statistics since they introduced that program here, but the county has approved these sliding scale tax abatements for a number of business parks that were created. Very, very successful. And, of course, the city of Pittsburgh right now is trying to woo Amazon.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
You know, for their Amazon, the giant company. I guess I don't have to tell anybody about Amazon, but their world headquarters is in Seattle, and they're looking to open up HQ2, as they call it, their second headquarters somewhere in the eastern part of the country, and Pittsburgh is still in the running, I guess.
Yeah.
But they also offered some, you know, some inducements, some abatements. Nobody knows what they were. They
yeah, I believe their plan was really shrouded in secrecy. I don't believe that they've, unless you know, I haven't heard that.
No,
they've
released
any
not.
Specifics.
It's been somewhat controversial. I can see their point. It's just like when you are in negotiations for a new business to come in. The Community Development Corporation does this, the CDC here in Butler County, and they don't say who they're in negotiations with in advance. In case the deal doesn't go through, you know,
mm-hmm.
company decides to go somewhere else, And that's understandable. You need to keep those talks under wrap. And that's what the mayor of Pittsburgh, Bill Peduto, that's what he says. Listen, we're in negotiations here. Mm-hmm. If we revealed what we've offered, then some of these other cities that are bidding for Amazon, they would have an advantage on us.
Right.
They would know what we offered, and they can come back with a counter offer. So I can understand that.
Yeah, whatever the ace up the sleeve, or hopefully they have a couple. Mm-hmm. If those get revealed, then places like Washington, D.C., the bigger places with more money and more resources, they're going to find a way to counter whatever Pittsburgh's potential advantage would be.
Yeah.
And they'd be able to do it, most likely.
The thing, I don't have any inside info on Amazon. I like the company. I use them for some things. I try to buy local when I can.
Yeah.
And if I can, I do. What I've always felt the city of Pittsburgh had going for them was the airport.
Mm-hmm.
It's very modern. It's not brand new anymore, but it's still immaculate. And it's underused.
Absolutely.
I don't know whether you've ever landed at Pittsburgh International at night. I have on occasions, and the place is like a tomb.
Mm-hmm.
There's just nobody there. And they've actually closed one of the wings because, when U.S. Air folded and, moved in with the American Airlines, that was no longer a hub, and that cut the number of flights down. But if you're talking about a company like Amazon that would be bringing in, cargo planes in and out like crazy, my goodness, the facilities are already there. The gates are there, yeah.
You got to think that that's an attractive resource.
Many other airports in the East are crowded,
The infrastructure's there. They'd be able to come in and utilize, the whole place, basically. The airport doesn't the airspace is open. There's mm-hmm. no major airports close. Surely I would hope that was pointed out in this secret proposal.
I hope Bill Peduto and Rich Fitzgerald, the Allegheny County executive, pointed that out.
Right.
Well, we'll find out about that sooner or later. We're chatting with Matt McCune. I realize that it's still September, but by gosh, it's the tail end, the last few days of September now. And we're looking ahead toward the holidays. Will there be Christmas trees in Diamond Park again this year, Matt, or are you hoping for that?
I will say I'm hoping for that. I see no reason why there shouldn't be. This Christmas tree project is something we've done. This will be the third year now that Butler Downtown has handled this.
Mm-hmm.
This is a project that I personally have worked on myself the last couple of years. I mean, I've had a lot of help, obviously, but I've been kind of responsible for moving the pieces around and really planning it. We plan to do it again. We do get some help from the county, which we are very, very much appreciate.
They own Diamond Park.
That's right. That's right. So we can't put anything in there without their blessing. But they do offer up some help from some of the maintenance workers, which we really appreciate as well. In years past, the large tree that goes in the middle has been donated by Renick's Tree Farm.
Mm-hmm.
So we certainly appreciate what they've done for us the last couple of years.
Up West Sunbury Road.
That's right. Yeah. This year, I was actually we've been approached by an individual who says that they have a tree on their property that they'd like to donate, we're going to see if this will work. I'd certainly like that to work out if it can.
Had some smaller trees last year for sure. Not sure about the year before. Surrounding the other one,
Yeah, we always do, or at least have in the past. There's four trees that kind of go around the perimeter of mm-hmm. the park, and then one large one in the middle, and we keep it that because we got some large steel bases built, and we have four small ones and one large one. That's where the numbers come from.
I can remember, whether it was last year or the year before, I don't remember the first year that I saw it. I was coming into town from south, coming up Route 8, and I came into the downtown. I really wasn't paying that much attention. I stopped at the red light there at the where next to your bank is, right at the courthouse, and happened to glance over, and it was the first time that I'd ever noticed the trees, and they were all, instead of multicolored lights, they were all white, white lights, and it was a little bit of snow coming down. It was absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. It looked like a fairyland forest over there with all the trees and white lights. It was really beautiful.
It's been a project we've improved each year. So I look forward to improving it this year, too. Last year, we bought new lights. There's LED, kind of cool white.
It must have been the ones that I saw that really caught my attention.
Looked very nice. I look forward to improving the project just a little bit every year.
Mm-hmm. Well, it looked great last year, I'll tell you that.
Thank you.
Might seem silly that we're talking about Christmas already, but you got to plan ahead, Here at the radio station, we're already talking about getting float entries in for the Spirit of Christmas parade the Saturday after Thanksgiving. And
a lot of planning has to go into these things. So, September is a good time to start thinking about it, because if you get to the end of October, time is running out, because I've been putting these trees up the week before Thanksgiving, because the weekend after Thanksgiving is the Christmas parade. Mm-hmm. If you're going to have a Christmas parade, you got to have a Christmas tree up by then.
Everything, yeah.
So November 16th is the day that I've kind of earmarked to put the big tree up if everything falls in place. And then the lights and the rest of the decorating will happen on Saturday, November 17th. So again, anybody out there who wants to volunteer, we will be looking for some help to help put the lights up on the 17th. So if anybody's out there interested, if anybody has a youth group or any other group that likes to volunteer or needs some community service hours or anything like that, please get a hold of me.
Good idea. And you can get a hold of you through the website, right?
Yeah, through the website, or I'm on Facebook personally. Anybody can reach out to me directly there.
Mm-hmm. The website is butlerdowntown.org. Other activities have pretty much wrapped up. I don't know whether the Butler Farm Market down on Chestnut Street is wrapped up for the year or not. It's got to be pretty close to the end because we're at the end of the harvest season.
And I believe it was a pretty good year again. So
I was down a couple of times, and it was great. There were nice crowds down there. Of course, the Butler Downtown organization has really augmented that whole experience on Saturday mornings with the, there was music down there many Saturday mornings. There were many, many more vendors and more farm products. It became a real treat.
I like to say it's a hidden gem in Butler on Saturday mornings. So go check it out.
Three blocks off Main, by the way. Still under the auspices of the Butler Downtown Organization. For the Butler Farm Market. What else did I want to ask you about? And again, this may be, it's not something in your particular area. There was a mapping project that was work on updating that. Are you familiar with that, Matt?
Yes, I am familiar with that.
I guess it was originally done a couple of years ago, and then it's in the process of being updated.
That's right. Much kind of like a revolving loan fund. Kind of sat around for a little bit done here, a little bit there, but never could really get it off the ground. There was a ton of data that was compiled. Some of it outdated once the dust got shaken off. That is ideally that information will be available on the website, kind of a click and go. Everything at your fingertips type situation for anybody who wants to come downtown, wants to find out what's there, what's available, and some more information. So it's a work in progress, but we're excited about it.
So this would show all of the space downtown and then all of the space that's available, where there might be a vacant storefront or something like that.
That's right. What the particular buildings hold, who's there, what's their phone number, things like that.
Never thought about that. You'd need to know how big it was,
Yeah.
Dimensions and that sort of thing. Yeah. I noticed that, and again, this wasn't a Butler downtown project, but they had the Italian Festival downtown again. This was the second year for it. This year, it was the weekend before Labor Day. The year before that, it was over the Labor Day holiday weekend. But they utilized the vacant lot where the Worsley's building used to be for their concert stage.
Yeah.
And they had a stage, you know, temporary stage set up there. It was roofed over and everything. And the chairs set up. And I didn't realize they were going to do that. It was a perfect spot.
Sure.
It was nice.
Sure, it is. It's good to see that space is being utilized for you know, somewhat of an obvious purpose.
Yeah. The Center City project is complete. Again, that was a project of the city, not of the Butler Downtown organization. But I know the people in Butler Downtown were very happy about it. The first phase of the project went along pretty smoothly with the new Rite Aid pharmacy. And then it took a little while. Sometimes it does with state grant money.
That's right.
You're never quite sure when it's going to be released and when you can move ahead with the project. We saw that on the historic Pullman Park project. And it was the same thing with the hotel. The tier garage went up pretty smartly. The hotel was a little bit slower than anticipated. But I have heard nothing but wonderful things since that hotel opened earlier this year.
Hey, good things take time, Dave, right?
Yeah. People say it's really gorgeous inside. And the last time I talked with the, I think she's the administrator, I'm not sure the exact title, for the Marriott people. And this is a Marriott Spring Hill Suites. She said they've had several weekends already where they've been booked out.
That's wonderful.
You know,
it's got to be good for the restaurant businesses around town too. People are staying there; they've got to eat. So, if people are around, if people are here, that's a good thing because a lot of people can benefit from that.
I know there were doubters whenever it was announced that, you know, a hotel would be part of that Center City project, and I had people call here on the program and say, well, who's going to stay there? I said, well, this is the Marriott, folks. So they don't build a new hotel without, you know, doing some business studies and seeing what they think is going to be the market. I said, if they think it'll fly, I'm pretty sure they've done some investigations.
Rather successful. They're certainly not in the business of building empty hotels.
So no, absolutely not.
They must know something that we don't.
And this is also, and I never realized this either, the Marriott group, the Marriott chain, has different levels. And this is a Spring Hills suite, which is one of the upper levels of the whole Marriott chain. So a little bit more of upper echelon clientele, which, again, is good.
That's good. Hey, the Marriott community thinks highly of the Butler community, obviously. So that's got to be a good thing.
And, of course, the second tier garage gives us much more parking. That's great for the downtown businesses, too.
Multi-use tier garage. The Butler Brewfest is held there in the summertime, which I've always thought was a great idea.
I wonder how that went this year. I don't think I ever got a report on it.
I was there, and it went well. It was very hot, but we were under a tent, so we did good. But well attended by both, you know, paying customers and patrons, but also the breweries and distillers around the area. So it was a fabulous event once again.
Well, it's a beer tasting event, so hot weather probably pretty good.
That's right.
Well, we're pleased to chat once again with Matt McCune. He is vice president of the Butler Downtown organization. Jerry Sullivan is still the president, I believe, right?
That's right.
So nice to have you here. Matt, by the way, is an attorney, and he's with the Conlon Tarker law firm here in town.
That's correct.
Good to see you again.
All right, Dave. Thanks for having me. Yeah. Appreciate it. Oh,
our pleasure. Please. We'll look forward to talking with you again.
Likewise.
We take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit about about your diet. It's not a diet. We're not talking about a diet per se. We're talking about how to get your mind set properly if you're interested in losing weight and keeping it off. Our guest will be J.J. Smith. We'll be chatting with her on the telephone coming up on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. So stick with us, and we will be back right after this.
Great products at greatly reduced prices is exactly what you'll find at Sharp Shopper Grocery Outlet. You'll find many of your favorite name brand grocery items, as well as fresh produce, frozen and refrigerated foods, and much more. All items 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Sharp Shopper has been bringing bargains to Pennsylvania communities for 30 years. Be sure to visit their new Butler store location in Point Plaza. Sharp Shopper Grocery Outlet, a new way to shop, a new way to save. Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center is offering a Silver Sneakers class for youngsters over 65 and the Over 50s Fitness class Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 9 to 10 a.m. Try Pio live on Mondays from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. and HIIT, High Intensity Interval Training, on Tuesday evenings, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. The Fitness Center at Applewood Chiropractic is open 7 days a week for your convenience. Visit applewoodchiro.com to learn more. Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center, Thornapple Drive, Butler.
Going to talk about losing weight, maybe permanently, listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest is J.J. Smith, who joins us by telephone. She is the author of a book entitled Think Yourself Thin. J.J. Smith, nice to have you with us here today.
It's great to be here.
Think yourself thin. Think yourself. That's critical, eh? You got to want to do it?
Yeah, you got to really want to. I mean, so many of us have been losing, gaining on every single diet. At some point, you have to say weight loss has got to be easier. So you want to really say, is there something that I can do differently to get better results?
Now, you refer to this as mental mastery, and you have a number of strategies outlined in your book. One of them that you talk about first is don't delay, don't procrastinate if you're really serious about this, eh?
Yeah, it's really important. I call mental mastery, it's that ability to master the mind so you can stay focused, motivated, and disciplined to get to your goal weight. And so many people focus on what to eat, what not to eat, following a very specific regimen. But most of us at this point know the basics, what to eat and not, but we just don't do it. And so what I try to do is help people understand, you know, by 7 mental strategies, new behaviors, new strategies, and things you can employ so that you actually stick to the plan. And that's what the goal of this book is about.
My understanding that the vast majority of people who lose weight on a diet actually gain it back again within a few years. Is that right?
Yeah, unfortunately so. Over 80% of people who lose weight on a diet gain it all back in 3 to 5 years. So the current approach is really not working. I mean, think yourself thin is for people who have lost and gained over and over, been on every diet, just tired and exhausted of trying to get to their goal weight. Maybe let's just stop losing weight and let's focus on getting to the goal. And I think people would have better results. And this book focuses on what can we do differently. Like, as an example, we talk about the 5 stages of weight loss. Most people don't know about them, but the stage called the stall, the weight loss plateau, is where a lot of people quit. They don't expect it, they get frustrated, and they don't know how to break through a weight loss plateau. So they quit right there. So there's so many things that we can learn to empower ourselves to actually get to the goal weight. I mean, who literally wants to be on a diet for the rest of their life?
Nobody, I wouldn't think. Yeah.
No.
J.J. Smith, listeners, is the author of some bestsellers, including the number one New York Times bestseller, 10-Day Green Smoothie Cleanse. She is a nutritionist and a certified weight loss expert. You may have seen her on Dr. Oz or, gosh, on all the networks, NBC, Fox, CW, and in a lot of magazines as well. One of your other strategies, J.J. Smith, is to use visualization techniques. I'm not sure that I quite understand this. Do you want to try to imagine yourself slimmer, or what do you mean by
Well, it's more about the power of words.
Okay.
What we say to ourselves, what we think, is what we manifest. So a lot of people are having the wrong conversation with themselves, and they're saying things like, I can't do it, I always quit, I give up. But you have to say things that literally change your relationship with food and your relationship with yourself. So visualization exercises are really about making powerful affirmative statements that really bring about the results you want. And so what we're trying to do is engage the mind, the spirit, in our weight loss efforts. So we're not just focused on the physical results, but we're really breaking through and getting to the root cause of why we struggle and we just can't get to our goal.
One of the things that you talk about in Think Yourself Thin is the difference between being interested in losing weight and being committed to losing weight. Two different things, right?
Oh, yes. Let me tell you, when people, everybody's interested in losing weight, but there are very few who are committed, because when you're committed, you're going to make the necessary sacrifices to get to the goal. You're going to let your family and friends know. You may not be able to go to lunch with your coworkers every day because they always eat unhealthy, but you're going to make some changes, and whatever sacrifices, no matter how uncomfortable, because you have committed to getting to the goal. And so many people are interested, you just kind of are lukewarm about it, but you're not going to go out of your way. You're not going to work hard. You're not going to make any changes. And so I help people understand, like, are you really interested or are you committed, and what you have to do to truly stay committed.
Is being overweight genetic? Are there genetic factors involved here, J.J. Smith?
There are some genetic factors in being overweight, as well as some health issues like, as an example, diabetes. But the good news is, just because you may lean to having certain health or weight issues doesn't mean it's not possible. It just means that without proper healthy eating and exercising, you're going to be predisposed to having the same issues some of your relatives have. So being empowered, being knowledgeable about how to help your body lose weight and get healthy still can get you to the results that you want.
Sometimes this change happens pretty quickly, especially if, obesity runs in the family. You can be thin or average weight for the first few decades of your life, and then all of a sudden, you know, you get to the 40s or 50s and
oh my goodness,
you really start
packing
it on.
Let me tell you, the 40s and the 50s, I'm 49, it is the most challenging time to lose weight because our hormones are declining, slowing down our metabolism. We're getting stubborn. I mean, literally, you may have some pasta by morning, you can literally see more fat. Your body gets so much more efficient at storing fat as your hormones decline. And so a lot of things we teach are about detoxing, balancing your hormones, and really putting your body in a position where it can still burn fat. You're either in fat storage mode or in fat burning. And what we try to teach is stay in fat burning mode because you'll lose weight more effortlessly. Whereas when you're storing fat, it almost doesn't matter what you do. You can exercise every day. It just seems like the fat won't go away.
One other thing you talk about, and I've never seen this before in any wire stories or any books, emotional hunger and actual physical hunger. Could you talk about that a little bit, JJ?
Sure. So emotional hunger is usually brought on based on some emotion that we're feeling. Physical hunger literally comes on every 3 to 4 hours, and our body's physically craving and wanting some food. The best way to determine if it's emotional hunger, if you just ate and it's an hour later and now you feel like you walk to the refrigerator, you're looking in, you want to eat something, you're craving something, but you are not hungry. And so what we are doing is using food to replace or deal with some emotion that we don't want to process. So we have to know what those triggers are, because emotional hunger comes on suddenly and it's generally right after we just ate, whereas physical hunger comes on naturally every 3 or 4 hours. So just look at the time. If you just ate an hour ago, you're probably not physically hungry. You are dealing with some emotion, and it's better to figure out what that feeling, what that emotion is, and process it instead of just eating to replace that feeling.
Are your strategies effective no matter what type of day? You know, there's a lot of people on different diets. Some people some people count calories. Some are going for low carbs. Some are going for high proteins. Whatever.
Yeah, there's hundreds of diet plans. The thing I love about Think Yourself Thin is it complements any diet plan. It's the complementary piece that will make following the diet plan easier. So you really can be on any diet, and what you need is, give me some tools so I can actually stick to the diet. And this is what Thank Yourself Thin does. It actually gives you the tools so that you can actually follow whatever weight loss or diet plan that you're on so you can get permanent results. Again, not losing and gaining. It's just time to get off the treadmill.
We'll take a break. We'll chat a little bit more with J.J. Smith about Think Yourself Thin here on It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be right back. One of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program today, the good folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. Society of St. Vincent de Paul operates a thrift store in the greater Butler Mart, Route 8, just south of Butler. And boy, they'd love to have your donations of clothing, shoes, furniture, household items, anything that you're cleaning out and don't want or don't need anymore. Instead of just tossing it into the trash, consider donating these items to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store. Somebody will be able to use them at a price they probably wouldn't have been able to afford otherwise. And here's the best part of all. Every single penny from the operation of the thrift store goes into the fund right here in Butler County to help fund the food bank and the client aid program. Every penny stays here locally. So you're helping out in a number of ways. And also keeping some stuff out of the landfill, too. We don't need any more in there than we have to. So think about it. The thrift store is open Monday through Saturday, 6 days a week, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. And again, they're located Route 8 South in the Greater Butler Mart, just south of Butler. Plenty of free parking right outside the door. The Society of St. Vincent de Paul in Butler. They like to say, we stand tallest when we stoop to help others. You know, there's nothing like walking into a place where everyone knows your name and welcomes you with a smile. And that's exactly what you'll get at Institute Hill Pharmacy in Butler. They can help you with all your personalized medication needs and specialty orders. And while you're there, get your lottery tickets, your snacks, plus gifts and greeting cards. Find out for yourself why Butler's hometown pharmacy is Institute Hill Pharmacy, 937 East Jefferson Street. And make sure to check them out on Facebook, too. Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest on It's Your Turn here on WISR this segment is J.J. Smith, author of Think Yourself Thin. I know in some other instances where people are trying to break a habit, tobacco habit, for example, some of the things that experts tell us are to don't put yourself in the circumstances where you're, for example, if you're trying to quit smoking, don't put yourself in circumstances where you've always smoked before, you know, like going into a bar or having a cup of coffee first thing in the morning or something like that. Can this sort of an approach also work in weight loss, trying to, you know, somehow control your environment or your circumstances? You understand what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely can work. I mean, we can't always maintain self-control and willpower. You know, once the cake is in front of your face, you're probably going to eat the cake. So you have to control your environment so that you avoid temptations altogether. A lot of times we say, oh, I'm just going to get some chips and cookies, but I'm just going to eat one. Well, until you really have a better relationship with food where you're not going to eat the whole bag, you might just have to not buy them. And that may sound disappointing, but it's temporary. But just the same as an alcoholic wouldn't walk into a bar when he's trying to recover, we really are going to have to stop buying foods that cause us to binge eat. And so a lot, and even little things, like we go to buffets and we'll just eat because the food is free and it's endless. Maybe just go to a restaurant where they give you one healthy meal and then get on out of there. So we can do things to change our environment because we cannot always rely on willpower and discipline.
It's interesting you should mention that because I have been to some buffet restaurants, and it's almost astonishing if you look around at the clientele at a buffet restaurant and how many
That's
of them are
overweight. That's a good point. I never thought about that.
Yeah. It seems like the majority of people there are overweight. It should tell you something, I guess.
And it's something in the environment that just says, well, you got to eat more because it's a buffet.
Yeah.
And people just indulge.
Speaking of people, you can have friends or even family members who can be toxic if you're trying to lose weight, right?
Oh, unfortunately so. I always encourage people, you got to detox family and friends. Just because they may be a blood relative doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to be supportive and help you make the change. And I think a lot of times people don't realize the negative impact of the conversation and the words other people have on us. You say you're going to go on a diet. They say you've always been on a diet. You're never going to lose that weight. And so it's so discouraging. So in the book, we teach about how important having accountability, having a support system is. And we even share there's a national registry that monitors what's called weight loss masters. And these are people who've lost over 30 pounds and kept it off for over a year. And one of the things they say that they all do is have some type of accountability partner or support system. And it doesn't have to be a family member. It just has to be someone who's like-minded, who shares the same goal, who wants to see the best for you. And unfortunately, it's not always our closest family and friends. And that's okay. Sometimes you have to leave people behind when you're trying to do something great in life.
Speaking of a support system, it helps if you have someone else, for example, if you're trying to exercise more regularly, whether it's just, you know, walking around the neighborhood or going to the gym on a regular basis, it helps to have a buddy, helps to have a partner, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, because we may say I'm going to the gym and not go, but if you're meeting a buddy there, you're not going to easily let someone down or stand them up or leave them hanging. So you're kind of accountable. You're like, well, they're already on their way. I guess I got to go. And we tend to go more than us just saying, I'll go another day when it's just you.
We're talking to J.J. Smith, author of Think Yourself Thin. You say that this is a 30-day guide. Can you really get yourself in the right frame of mind in just a month's time, J.J.?
You really can. It's a 30-day guide to end your struggle with weight forever. So what the 30 days, it's called a 30-day mental mastery challenge. It walks you through 30 different exercises that change the way you think, your habits, and your behaviors so that you don't continue to fall off track. And so some of the exercises even include things that deal with emotional eating, improving the relationship with food, having realistic expectation, breaking through weight loss plateaus. It really sets a foundation that you can use to have long-term weight loss, permanent weight loss, which is the goal for most of us.
You talk about aligning the mind and the spirit for weight loss goals. Okay, I can understand the mind part because we talked about that earlier in our conversation where you really have to commit, you know, you have to be committed, not just interested in losing weight. What's the spirit have to do with it, JJ?
Well, I think for so many of us, you know, we believe in some higher power, but we don't really engage that power in our weight loss efforts. So, you know, whatever spiritual practice that you place, it's time to really engage the spirit and the mind so that weight loss won't be so difficult. And so one of the things we do is teach people to engage in things that increase their spiritual strength and fortitude. Because, again, dealing with willpower and discipline and dealing with the flesh and trying to really deny things is just a very difficult struggle to live all your life. But you really, really can improve the quality of your spiritual life as a way to strengthen your ability to, you know, not struggle with weight.
And JJ emphasizes, folks, this is not a diet book, even though the title may lead you to think that. It's not a diet book. You're talking about crucial mental strategies here, JJ.
Yes. Seven mental strategies. It's called the Success System, and it's seven mental strategies of things that people are not doing, and they don't realize these are the things that you have to have in place to be able to stick to any weight loss or diet plan. And so it's not a diet book, but it will change, dramatically change your relationship with food and help you get to your goal weight once and for all.
You do have some stories in here, though, about people who have done this successfully, right?
Oh, yeah. We have. See, it's so important to look at success stories. You need to see real people having real results and hear how they overcame their struggles. And so what we did is asked our community, people that we know and we've seen lose the weight on this journey, to share their stories. Now, their picture will totally motivate you, but when you hear how they reversed diabetes or lost 100 pounds or got the energy to play with their kids, it really encourages because you say, I can do this too. This sounds like me. And so we have a whole chapter of success stories that people can actually use as motivation on their own journey.
The title is Think Yourself Thin by J.J. Smith. Thanks for chatting with us, J.J. Nice to have you with us today.
My pleasure.
All righty. So long now.
Bye-bye.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The
bus. We're going your way.
Butler Transit now provides weekday transportation to and from Pittsburgh for just $5 one way. Pittsburgh destinations include downtown and the North Shore. Whether you're looking for a less expensive commute to work or wanting to visit the attractions of the Pittsburgh area, let the bus take you there. Senior 65 and up, ride free with a senior pass. For more information, visit butlertransit.com.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
What are we going to talk about, listeners, on this segment of It's Your Turn? Here on WISR, I'm Dave Malarkey. Well, I'll tell you, we're going to talk about how do we parent and educate and employ members of the Y generation. And visiting with us to talk about that is Mark C. Perna, author of a book entitled Answering Why. Mark, nice to meet you. Great to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Dave, it's great to be with you. Thank you so much for having me.
By the way, when you talk about the Y generation, that's not the letter Y, but it's Y, W-H-Y, right? Y,
correct.
Y, Daddy.
Well, you're not too far, Dave. So, yeah, I called my book Answering Why, W-H-Y, because they're young people today, and I'm talking about 38 and younger. They are looking for an answer to that question for almost everything they do. And so, one of the ahas I get around the country as I speak, I do 40 to 50 keynote speeches a year all over North America. And, one of the aha moments is when I say to people, you know, if you ask a young person to do something and they look back at you, you know, and they say, well, why should we do it that way? Most of us take that as a smart aleck response, and we give, of course, the all-American response back, which is, because I said so. But most young people don't mean it as a smart aleck response. Most young people mean it as, you know, why do we do it this way? Because there has to be a better way to do this. There has to be a way for us to use Google something or put it in the cloud or be able to streamline this in a way that gets more effective. And what we do is instead of kind of, you know, harnessing that resource that they want to bring to this, we cut their knees out from underneath them and ask them to do it the way we've done it. So that's why I named the book that. And so that kind of heads down to why I call them the Y generation.
A little bit about our guest listeners. Mark C. Perna is a workforce development consultant and education strategist. He's spent more than 20 years in the field with extensive research on the forces that motivate people, especially young people. You talk about the skills gap in your book, Mark. What exactly is the skills gap? What do you mean by that?
Well, we've had this issue in this country for a while, and so the easy way to explain a skills gap is there are millions of people who are unemployed in this country, and there are millions of jobs that are open. The people who are unemployed can't do the jobs that are open, and the jobs that are open currently sit at over 6.7 million jobs in this country in high demand and high wage fields in, you know, aerospace and aviation, manufacturing, healthcare, construction, all of these fields where employers are struggling to find people that can do these jobs and have the skills, you know, the academics and the skills necessary and professional skills in order to be able to do them. And they can't find them anywhere. And so I've met and talked with executives at Caterpillar and Boeing and John Deere just a couple of weeks ago, and they're doing everything they can to try to find the people that can do these jobs that are very sophisticated jobs, but they're just not attracting enough young people into these career fields. And that's creating this skills gap. And so I think it's a tremendous challenge for us as a country because a lot of business and industry in this country can't grow until they have the skilled workforce doing the things that they need to get done.
So if our younger people are not heading in this direction, is it because our education system or our workforce development systems are broken, Mark?
I think it is. It's because they're not really working together. Education kind of works on its own, and then, you know, workforce development works on its own. So I think in this country, part of the challenge is that we're trying to get everyone to go to college. We have this cultural love affair with everyone goes to a four-year, you know, degree university and tries to get a degree, because we've kind of set up this fallacy in this country that everyone is successful if they get a four-year degree, and the truth just isn't there. Now, I'm a tremendous fan of getting a four-year degree, you know, so don't get me wrong. You know, I think if what you want to do in life requires a four-year degree, I think you need to go with passion, go with purpose, you know, invest wisely, but make sure that you get it done. And in many parts of this country, it's just not happening that way. Kids aren't successful because they're getting to college and they're realizing there really isn't anything there that's interesting for them. They want to go in a different way. So, you know, I'm a big fan of driving more career development down into the younger ages, into middle schools and high schools. And not that a young person has to figure out what they want to do for the rest of their life, but they do need to figure out kind of what they need to do for now. You know, what direction do they want to set off in, and they can change at any time. So I think that helps, you know, take care of the skills gap. And I really don't think we have a skills gap in America. I think we have an awareness gap, you know, that people just don't know all the options and opportunities that are available out there that are pretty extraordinary at all levels of education.
What role do parents play on this issue, Mark?
Well, a huge one, because, you know, a lot of parents don't know what they don't know as well, you know, so a lot of them are dealing on old paradigms. So those old paradigms are, you know, just, you know, if you go to college, you're going to be more successful. But, you know, it not only matters if you go to college, but also what do you take while you're there? What do you get a degree in that does it have opportunities? You know, can you do something and get a, you know, not only a living wage, but a really viable wage that allows you to kind of take things to the next level? So I wrote the book, you know, I wrote Answering Why so that parents really understood, you know, how the education and workforce development arena works in this country, and then how they can unleash that passion, purpose, and performance in their young person. So, and then, you know, also bringing, you know, so I kind of wrote the book for parents, educators, and employers so that we could start kind of bridging these generational and cultural divides.
Well, if college isn't right for everybody, what path should students take if they don't think college is for them?
Well, you know, it's not a matter of really determining whether college is for them. It's determining what kind of a lifestyle do they want. You know, I say this to people all the time, is that, you know, young people today make lifestyle decisions. More than half of every decision a young person makes is based on how it affects their lifestyle. Career, to a large extent, has become a lifestyle decision. And so what I tell young people is they need to understand the lifestyle they want, and they need to find a career that kind of matches that lifestyle, kind of hits that perfect intersection, if you will. And it's at that point then they can determine what kind of education or training do they need to accomplish that. That's when they can look at, you know, a four-year degree, maybe it's a two-year degree or an associate's degree, maybe it's an apprenticeship, maybe it's an advanced certification, maybe it's a licensure. There's lots of ways to get many places in this country, but they should look at all of them. They should see what matches their lifestyle and career aspirations and the things that they like to do. And I think they're setting themselves off in a much better direction when they go from that perspective.
I've always looked at college in a couple of different ways, not just preparing for a possible career, hopefully preparing for a possible career, but I always see it as kind of a maturation stage. You know, for most students, it's the first time that they're living away from home for any extended period of time. They're on their own, developing responsibility. I would hate to see us miss that step in life, Mark. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, I'm not suggesting that they miss it at all. You know, again, but what I'm advocating is, I'm not advocating for any certain kind of education. What I'm advocating is that a student knows why they're going where they're going, so that there's some purpose behind it. Because if there isn't, they'll go and they'll invest, you know, largest sums of money, potentially lots of debt. You know, the current debt numbers in this country are over $1.4 trillion in student loan debt. A lot of that money is, you know, a little over 11% of that, you know, or $154 billion of it, it's more than 90 days in default. So there's a lot of young people today that can't service the debt that they're going towards. So all I'm stating and advocating is that young people need to understand at a much earlier age what do they want, what do they like, what do they enjoy, what kind of a lifestyle do they want to set up, and then determining the right piece of education for them as a result of that. They can learn a lot of that, you know, those adult issues and things, Dave, that you mentioned, because I'm behind you 100%. They can learn a lot of that as they go through the maturation process, you know, in any area they go to.
When you travel around the country to speak, which you do a lot, do you speak to educators as well about these issues?
Yeah, I speak to probably 75% of my audiences are made up of educators at all levels, college, high school, middle school, elementary school, and then the balance is business and industry, professionals, and parents. So it's a wide range, and in a number of the speeches that I speak to, there's also young people, so, you know, middle school and high school kids, too, so I speak to them as well.
We'll take a quick break, listeners. We're chatting with Mark C. Perna. If you're looking for him online, it's P-E-R-N-A, Mark C. Perna, author of Answering Why. Back with more right after this.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey. It's the It's Your Turn program here on WISI. We're chatting with Mark C. Perna, author of Answering Why, How Do We Motivate Young People? How do we do that? I mean, they have to understand that they've got to perform while they're in high school, and they want to have a very successful career. How do we motivate them, Mark?
Well, first we have to answer their why. They need the answer to that question for everything that they do. Next, we have to focus on lifestyle. You know, where do they want to go? What kind of a lifestyle do they enjoy? Do they love vacations? Do they want to travel the world? Do they want to give back? Are they environmentally conscious? You know, what are all the lifestyle things that have to connect? And then you motivate them, too, by understanding what makes them tick. And so, you know, a lot of what I wrote was, how do you understand what they tick? And I'll give you a great example of this. So my son, I've got two sons. I've been a single parent for 22 years, and my sons today are 31 and 29 years old. So my youngest son, Nick, who's 29, hated going to school, hated everything about it. When he was a sophomore in high school, he avoided going to school. He missed the maximum number of days his freshman and sophomore year, was sporting an unimpressive 1.5 cumulative grade point average. And all of this was the way his career went until he walked in and spent 30 minutes in a programming class where they teach computer programming. He walked out of that, came home that night, and I asked him how his day was, and he said, "Dad, I know what I want to do with the rest of my life," which, as an aside, Dave, is the scariest thing you can hear from your son or daughter, because you never know what's coming out of their mouth next. And I said, what do you want to be? And he goes, "I want to be a software engineer." Well, my son became so excited about becoming a software engineer that he's great. He finished his high school tenure with a 2.5 grade point average. He got a high score on the ACT, went to Akron University, completed, you know, a 4-year degree. Today he's 29 years old. He's a software engineer apprentice. He makes $85,000 a year, and he's living the dream. His motivation happened from he had the answer to his why. He figured a want to in his life, and I share this with people around the country, is that if the want to is strong enough, you want to do something, the how to will come. You'll figure out how to get there. And so to motivate them, it's how do we get them to want something, and that's what I talk about.
You call this the light at the end of the tunnel strategy.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely.
Light at the end of the tunnel. The light is the goal, I guess, right?
Correct. Yeah, the light is whatever it is, their career or whatever their lifestyle is. The tunnel is the time they spend in education or training or life. You know, it's the work, the labor, the effort, the skill development, the academic rigor. It's all of the things that have to happen to get you to that light at the end of the tunnel. And so when my son saw that he wanted to be a software engineer and that was the lifestyle he wanted to live, you know, that brought him down the tunnel and it motivated him significantly. I tell people this all the time. I'm a tremendous fan of young people today. You know, when I talk about younger generations, it's 38 and younger. And what I love about them is that they're so passionate when they finally determine what it is that they want in their life. Our challenge as parents, educators, and employers is getting them to want something. But once they do, they're unstoppable. They're an incredible resource to tap into. So, I love young people today because I think they're the next greatest generations.
You have developed something called a career tree for classrooms. Mark Perna, tell us about that.
Yeah, the career tree is something that came really out of my experience with my son and then what I do with education nationwide. And so it's a simple concept. It's, if someone wants to check it out, it's tfsresults.com careertree/careertree. And a career tree is simply a way to explain to students at any age, middle school, high school, what kinds of careers are possible through any pathway or program so that they can see how can they get to a four-year degree and beyond with a competitive advantage. How could they, you know, what kinds of things are available if they want to unlock a two-year associate's degree? What kinds of things could they, you know, take a program, get a license or an apprenticeship and go directly into a career from there? So it gives students all the options and opportunities on the table so that they can best select something with purpose that they can then go off with passion to do.
What about the technological advances? It's hard to keep up with it. Even in the last decade, it's really unprecedented. That certainly must impact the Y generation when they're trying to determine their career path.
Well, it does because the landscape is shifting constantly. You know, we are, you know, you're very in tune because the things that are advancing out there today are advancing faster and faster each day. And younger generations are in a perfectly tuned to things, and they pick up quicker. I'm in at the very end of the baby boom generation, and you know, for me, if I want to know how something works, I'm usually pretty intuitive, but I'm quickly on the phone with you know, my sons or other, you know, millennials or Generation Z to help explain technology to me to get me to the kind of that next level. So they're very in tune as part of their, you know, part of their ecosystem, if you will, and they react very quickly to it.
Manufacturing jobs are in huge demand today. And the demographics indicate that will continue for the foreseeable future. Not necessarily, though, your father's Oldsmobile, right, in terms of what we generally think of as manufacturing jobs.
No, they're very different. I just had dinner several weeks ago with executives from John Deere down in the Quad City areas of Illinois and Iowa, and they've offered to bring me out sometime in the next month or so to visit their manufacturing facilities because they are so state of the art, they are so clean, they are so high tech robotic environments that, you know, manufacturing has taken on a totally different feel in this country, and it's a way more high demand, high wage career where you can make $80,000, $90,000, $100,000, $120,000 a year in a career that people are screaming for people to get into these areas.
Construction is another area, steel, iron, and also things like precision machining. Now, if you're thinking about that, and we have several here in our area, Western Pennsylvania, we're just north of Pittsburgh, we have several extremely cutting-edge high-tech companies. They're manufacturing companies, but it's precision engineering. Now, you've got to have the qualifications for that. You've got to be pretty good in math, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. There's a lot of critical thinking and math skills that are needed in order to be a good precision machinist, in order to be able to understand how to calculate down to, you know, the kind of the nth degree, if you will. So students in these fields, you know, still require a great deal of academic rigor. They require, you know, the technical skills and also the professional skills that go with it. The professional skills are things, you know, like work ethic and punctuality and leadership, communication. So they have to kind of bring all of this to bear, and there are wonderful careers attached to them.
That really ties in with a luncheon that you had fairly recently with a conference at Harvard University, Pathways to Prosperity. You said
correct.
You've talked with a number of Fortune 100 execs, and in many cases, their companies are no longer hiring people just because they have master's degrees. They're looking for demonstrated experience, real life work skills.
Right. Yeah, you have to have the work skills, the technical skills, you know, and you have to bring those to bear with some kind of a work history too. So I talk to advanced manufacturers. I mean, you know, the kinds of folks that are making the products that you and I use and ride in or on in this country, and they're talking about, you know, taking people strictly based on their work history and the skills to do a job at any level in their organization all the way to CEO. So it's pretty extraordinary the way the workforce development arena is shifting. And what I'm trying to do is kind of raise awareness with parents and school systems and business and industry as to how this works and with young people, so that we can better fit and close this talked about earlier, and how we better align, you know, young people with all of the careers and occupations that are possible out there, which is extraordinary, and there's some wonderful opportunities.
What's your target audience, Mark, for your book, Answering Why? Are you looking at not only young people, I would imagine parents too. Parents, you know, they want their kids to succeed.
Yeah, the primary audience for my book is parents, educators, and employers, you know, for that group. The surprise audience to me has been I didn't necessarily write it for the younger generations. That's actually a second book that I'm looking to start probably in the December timeframe, which will be how young people can create a competitive advantage in their life. So I didn't write it for young people, but young people are running to the book, and they're very excited about the book because it speaks to them about them in a very positive way, which is unlike most things that are out there today. So that's who it's for.
Full disclosure, folks, as we wrap up our chat with Mark C. Perna, he lives in Cleveland, right, Mark?
Yes, and Dave, it is what it is, you know.
I think
we do battle several times a year.
Oh, the rivalry between the Steelers and the Browns is terrific. I just love it. And by the way, a nice rivalry developing between the Pirates and the Cleveland Indians, too, now that we have interleague play.
Absolutely, which is a wonderful thing.
Absolutely. You know, win some, lose some, or in the case of our most recent encounter, tie some.
Tie some. So true.
Once again, the title of Mark's book is Answering Why, W-H-Y, Answering Why, Mark C. Perna. Hey, Mark, enjoyed the chat. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Dave. All the best.
And to you. So long.
Midday lottery numbers for today. The pick 2 is 02, 02. Pick 3, 441, 441. The pick 4, 3327. The pick 5, 48204. Wild ball for each of those is 9. The treasure hunt, 11, 16, 27, 29, and 30. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $101,000.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Going to be chatting once again, listeners, with a guest that we've spoken with in the past. She is well-known novelist, best-selling novelist, Karen Kingsbury. Welcome, Karen. Nice to have you with us again on the It's Your Turn program here on WISR.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to be back.
You have another new book that's come out called To the Moon and Back. And this is another in your most recent series, right? It's the Baxter family. Am I right on that?
Yes, the Baxters are in this one, but they are more background characters. So this tends to be a little bit more of a standalone. People can pick it up if they've never even heard of the Baxters.
Well, one of the main characters in this Karen Kingsbury novel is Brady Bradshaw. Tell us a little bit about Brady Bradshaw, Karen.
So Brady is a firefighter in Oklahoma City, and he's in his late 20s, and he's just empty inside. And the reason is he's never been able to get over the anger and the grief over losing his mother when he was 5 years old in the Oklahoma City bombing. So, you know, most of us can remember that. It was 1995, and that's a very real event. Whereas Brady is a fictional character, he represents the kinds of things that came out of that event. And he's going through life helping people, but then very empty on the inside.
Yes, all of a sudden I realize that's, 23 years ago now since that tragedy, right? Yeah.
Isn't that something? Yeah, it's been so long. And then I have some young readers who are picking this book up and saying, I had no idea that this was such a, you know, it was kind of a that time sort of a 9-11. It was a 9-11 for that era, right, mm-hmm. you know, during those years.
Domestic terrorism, of course, because it was perpetrated by an American. One of your other main characters, in fact, the other main character in the novel is Jenna Phillips. Who is she, Karen?
So Jenna has a very similar story to Brady in that she was 5 years old when she lost both of her parents in the Oklahoma City bombing. So his mom was a single mom. Brady was with her in the building when the bomb went off. She fell on top of him to protect him. He lived, and then his mother died. Jenna, she was with her grandmother. She wasn't in the building. Both of her parents worked in the building, and they were both killed. So as five-year-olds, they lost their parents and were kind of faced with life. You know, what does this look like? What does it mean? And it becomes a bit of a faith kind of journey, too, for Jenna and Brady when they first meet. They had never met until they were 16 on the anniversary of the bombing at the Oklahoma City Memorial. And they're at the memorial. They meet. They have this crazy strong connection because who could understand what they'd been through except with each other? And then they lost track of each other. Now it's many, many years later. They're in their late 20s and just hoping to find each other again.
So they met really by accident. They just both happened to be attending the event on the anniversary of the tragedy. And then they never saw each other again?
Right, exactly. And every year since then, Brady goes back to the memorial. He has a letter for her, for Jenna, and he sticks it in the fence. There's a chain link fence there where even today people can leave mementos or photos, things that they want to leave for people who they lost or just in general to say, you know, I'm sorry this happened or whatever they want to say. So the fence is still there, and every year on the anniversary, Brady goes and he leaves a letter for Jenna, but she has moved to another state. She's been through a broken up marriage. So she's in Ohio. She's never, you know, been back and doesn't plan to go back. And that's where the book starts.
We're talking, listeners, to novelist Karen Kingsbury about her latest novel called To the Moon and Back. Well, that's an interesting beginning of a plot. I can see lots of things happening there. But tell me, Karen, how the heck does the Baxter family fit into this story?
The Baxters are on a spring break trip, and they are heading out to go see a couple theme parks. It's Ashley and her family and Carrie and her family. And they have, you know, Ashley is raising her niece as one of her kids. She has three kids plus her niece, she and her husband. And Amy, the niece, is 11 years old, and she wants to see the survivor tree at the Oklahoma City Memorial. It was something that meant a great deal to her parents. She's lost her parents as well in a car accident years ago. And so she wants to go there, and that becomes part of their spring break trip. So Ashley is standing at the chain link fence when she sees this, you know, Brady puts a letter for Jenna in the fence. And she is just drawn by the sadness in this guy's face. So when he finally leaves, he waits a long time hoping that this girl will come. When he finally leaves, she goes over to the fence, takes the letter, and takes a photo of it, puts it back in the fence because she has to figure out what this is. So later she reads the letter on her phone and decides that she's the person who can step into the story here and make a difference and find Jenna, which, of course, does not go over that well with her husband and family who think, what in the world are you doing?
I can understand that. So she thinks she's going to maybe play matchmaker or something here, or she has no idea?
Well, she thinks that she has at least the research skills to find this girl. She thinks somebody's got to be able to find her. I mean, she's somewhere, and she wants to help. And I think that, you know, this is, it's very much you know, honorable intentions for Ashley, but the firefighter's a very good-looking guy, and, you know, her own husband, Landon, is like, why are you reaching out to this single guy? Like, this doesn't look good, doesn't seem right. But she has great intentions, and eventually she does connect them, but that's just the beginning of their troubles.
Have you been to the Oklahoma City site of this horrible domestic terrorism act almost 25 years ago? Have you been there, Karen?
I have been there. That's actually what started the idea for this story. I was on tour with Women of Faith, and we had a few hours to spare, so the speakers, we all went to the memorial, and I was just struck by the reverence there. It's just profound to walk onto the park-like setting. And there's a couple things that really stood out. One, there's a giant wall that's made of bronze that's at the very beginning of the memorial, and there's an equally impressive one at the other end. The first one at the top in four-foot-high numbers, it says 901. On the other side, it says 903. So 901 is the minute before the bomb went off, when life was good and whole and right, and no one ever saw it coming. And, you know, that's really how it is for us when something, whether it's the phone call or the accident or the diagnosis, you have that minute before, and that represents life before. And then there's no mention of 902. That's when the bomb went off. But then on the other side, 903 is the very first minute of healing. And it's the choice that we make, though we're going to go through life with that loss, and it's going to always hurt. Still, it's a choice that we have to be able to live in 903, to live in a direction with our hearts and our faces pointed toward healing.
I can, just hearing you talk about it, Karen Kingsbury, I can remember the video of that horrible thing. The building, which was a federal office building, as I recall, and it's kind of like the whole front half of it was blown off for several stories. The rest of it still stood, but it was just a frightening thing to see. Is there, in fact, a survivor tree there, or is that something that you invented for your novel?
There is a survivor tree. As you said, you know, the front half of this Alfred P. Murrah building in Oklahoma City was just, you know, decimated. It was gone. Across the street from that very area was an American elm tree. It's a beautiful tree, and it also took a serious hit from the explosion. Its branches were sheared off, its bark caught fire, and the trunk was embedded with shrapnel, and everyone assumed it was dead. I mean, it was obviously just part of the damage of the area of what had happened. But at the one-year anniversary, it was still standing because the trajectory of the shrapnel made that tree kind of like evidence. They needed to see where it was coming from, and that tree served as evidence. So it stood. No one ever took it down. And at the one-year anniversary, people were gathered around. They were praying and remembering, and someone looked at the tree, and the tree had little green baby branches growing out of it.
Hmm.
So they began to nourish it and take care of it, and it began to take on new life. And now it stands at the center of the memorial site, and it is the largest tree in Oklahoma City, and it has this beautiful canopy of branches. You could put 30 people under it. And people love to just go and even just put their hands on the bark and see that the reality is, especially with faith, you know, that there is beauty and new life that can come from the ashes of whatever tragedy you're going through.
That's a wonderful symbolism there. I'm trying to remember the story. It's been a long time since I've read about that tragedy. Wasn't there even a nursery in that building? It was like, you know, child sitting for the employees who worked there, and there were some very young children that died, I believe, in that bombing as well.
Yes. Yeah, 168 people died. 19 of them were children from the daycare center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. It brings it all back to me, hearing you talk about it. Well, this is a love story, folks, that blooms, just like the survivor tree still lives, that blooms out of this tragedy. To the Moon and Back by Karen Kingsbury. Many of you listeners will be familiar with her. She is a number one New York Times best-selling novelist. Many have called her America's favorite inspirational storyteller. Do you have any idea, Karen, how many books you've written down through the years? I know it's a bunch of them.
I really don't. I know it's, I think it's like 70-ish. I mean, something like that. There's a lot of novels, and I just, you know, God is so good. He just keeps giving me stories. He keeps putting, last night I was on a flight, and I'm just writing as quickly as I can and have this new idea, and I think that'll be a book out November of 19. I've written everything. I've written my November of 18 book, and I've written my March of 19 book, but the November 19 book was just coming to life, and I take no credit.
Working ahead, huh? Yeah.
Well, yes.
Karen's last dozen titles have all topped the bestseller lists. Many of your novels are under development by Hallmark for movies, right?
Yeah, we've actually had four now that have been made into movies with Hallmark, which has been great. So Hallmark is also contemplating a TV series with The Bridge, which was a movie that they did based on my book, The Bridge. But the biggest thing I think coming up film-wise is...